Goodman, who's a postdoc with Roger Malko at the University of Waterloo in PN Roy, also at the University of Waterloo in Chemistry Department.
Good morning. First, the work I'll be discussing today was done in collaboration with Adrian Del Maestro at the University of Vermont, as well as Roger Malko and PN Roy here in Waterloo. And I'll mostly be discussing how this paper recently appeared in Nature Physics. So just a brief outline of what I want to discuss. So as the title suggests, I'll be discussing entanglement in condensed matter system. But because this is a condensed matter symposium, I don't want to assume that everyone thinks about entanglement in many body systems all the time. So I do want to give a background discussion, an introduction to entanglement in many-body systems first. And our ultimate goal is to describe entanglement in a real quantum phase of matter, superfluid helium 4. And so that requires a numerical method to study entanglement. So I'll introduce the numerical quantum Monte Carlo method we use to study entanglement. And finally, I'll present our results for a study in superfluid helium. Okay, so a little bit of background of entanglement in many-body physics. So just to motivate the overall question we're going to be addressing, we have some many-body system, and I'm going to assume that our many-body system is in a pure state, so perhaps the ground state of a Hamiltonian. And we're going to choose a subregion, and we'll bipartition our system into a subregion and a complement. And then we're essentially asking the question, can our overall state of this the system be written as a product state of the subregion A and the complement B? And if not, how entangled are A and B? We want to quantify the entanglement between these two regions of space in our many-body system. So this can generically be done for any many-body system, but the question is why would we be interested in this quantity, which is, you know, of course, a quantum information-related quantity? So beyond the fact that entanglement is a fundamental feature of quantum mechanics, quantum information has told us that entanglement is actually a useful physical resource that can be taken advantage of in quantum information processing algorithms. So it's a useful feature of quantum systems in general, including quantum matter. And increasingly, quantum many-body systems and condensed matter systems are being proposed as the basis for quantum information processing technologies. So there's value in understanding this physical resource in a many. But even if we only care about living in the condensed matter world, what we've learned is that entanglement can be used to characterize and classify quantum phases of matter, including phases of matter such as topological spin liquids, where there is no local order parameter that would allow us to characterize the phase of matter as we can do with conventional phases. And finally, both theoretically and very practically, an understanding of the entanglement structure of many-body systems, such as the entanglement onslaughts, for example, of matrix product states that underlie DMRG, has led to the development of very powerful numerical methods for studying many-body and condensed matter systems. And so by understanding entanglement, we can then develop new numerical tools. So hopefully these gives you motivation to think that we should maybe care about entanglement, even if we're not necessarily immediately thinking about quantum information. Okay, so how are we going to quantify entanglement? Well, to quantify it, we were going to consider the reduced density matrix subsystem. If A and B are in a product state and are unentangled, the reduced density matrix rho A is going to be a pure state. But if A and B are entangled, it's going to be a mixed state. And we can quantify the entanglement between A and B by looking at the entropy of that reduced density matrix. Now, you might be most used to thinking about the von Neumann entropy. We can generalize the von Neumann entropy to the so-called Renyi entropies, which have an index alpha, and the von Neumann entropy is a special case of these Renyi entropies. And actually, I'll focus, most of the results will focus on the alpha equals 2 second Renyi entropy for reasons you'll see as we go forward. So the point here is we can use these Reni entropies to quantify the entanglement of the two subregions of our many-body system. So just as a very simple example, we have a two-spin system with a single parameter, and these are the first three Reni entropies. The lower Reni entropies bound the higher Reni entropies, but the main point is they generally carry essentially the same physical content, even though they may differ somewhat quantitatively. Okay. So there's been a lot of work theoretically understanding entanglement in many-body systems for a while now, but fortunately, in the last couple of years, there's been experimental breakthroughs that allow experimentalists to actually measure the Reni entropies in particular in many-body systems. And so that work then means that now there's going to be more need to study entanglement in experimentally relevant systems. And that's one of the general motivations of the work I'm going to be discussing, is we want to now be able to describe experiments and move a little bit away from just describing purely idealized theoretical models. So there's a lot of exciting experiments that hopefully will continue to teach a lot more about entanglement in many-body physics. Of course, some of the pioneering work done by Rajibul Islam, who's this afternoon. So what do we expect for, what does the entanglement tell us, and how do we expect the entanglement to behave in a many-body system? So if we take a typical state in a Hilbert space, a random state, typically that random state will have an extensive entropy, extensive in the volume of our subregion. And that's what we expect from, say, thermodynamic entropy. So that's maybe not surprising that to find extensive entropy. But it turns out, while that's the typical behavior of a random state, ground states, we've learned that ground states are fairly special. And rather than showing such an extensive entropy, most commonly ground states are found to have an entanglement entropy that scales sub-extensively, not with the volume of the subregion, but just with the boundary area of the interface between two subregions. So this is the so-called famous area law or boundary law. You can compare that to the famous area law of black hole physics. And so this is a property not of some random state in the Hilbert space, but a very special property of ground states, at least for local Hamiltonians. Now, in one dimension, we do have mathematical proof that an area law should be followed for gap one-dimensional systems. But beyond one dimension, we don't actually have a formal proof that the area law will hold in any physically relevant case, although there's been a variety of theoretical work studying field theories and simplified spin other lattice models, numerics, and exactly solvable models. So there's a lot of evidence for seeing the area law in two and three dimensions. But our motivation here was, what can we say about real phases of matter that exist in experiments in two and three dimensions? And can we quantitatively, rather than simply qualitatively, describe the entanglement in these systems? So this is our motivation here is, can we go beyond these idealized theoretical studies and actually quantitatively characterize real quantum phase matter? Now, the area law, the leading order scaling, is not all there is in entanglement, actually. There's a lot more that can be learned. So we've known theoretically for a while now that corrections, higher order corrections to the area law can provide a lot of fundamental physical content, fundamental and universal properties of the quantum phase of matter in question. And so this is another, as I mentioned earlier, this is one of the motivations from a kinetic matter perspective. We can learn things, for example, such as the topological order in a spin liquid when there are Goldstone modes present due to the spontaneous breaking of a continuous symmetry. Those leave a signature. And so these fundamental universal features of the quantum phase of matter can be essentially read out in some cases from the entanglement scaling. And notice that entanglement entropy is sort of an agnostic quantity. We can define the entanglement entropy for any state, no matter what sort of correlations it has. We don't have to know something about correlation functions and symmetry breaking to define the entanglement. So the fact that you can read out information, it gives sort of a universal way of learning about a quantum many body. So while we don't have any exact mathematical proof of the area law in higher dimensions, outside of one dimension, you can argue, as some of these references do, that based on a few fundamental physically relevant principles, you can argue that you expect an area law, and that it's maybe not surprising that it's so commonly seen. And the principles include that fact that entanglement is generated by local correlations that are local to the boundary, and that we get correlations from different all the relevant length scales over which the physical system has correlations, and those all add up. And using these fundamental principles, you can construct a phenomenological scaling argument that you do expect. So here I'm specifying three dimensions, because that'll be the focus of the talk, that you will get a leading order area law, and then you also have possibly a logarithmic subleading term, and then higher order, only strictly even powers in three dimensions of higher order correctness. And these are features. The area law and the nature of this phenomenological scaling is directly related to the principles which essentially are constraining the nature of the entanglement. So that will be our goal, is to essentially, can we validate these physical principles and see if this phenomenological scaling holds in a real phase of matter, in a quantitative. Okay, so before we get to the application then, I want to briefly describe the method that we use. So we want to study a strongly interacting quantum many-body system, superfluid helium, and so we need a numerical method to quantitatively describe it. So we'll use a path integral quantum Monte Carlo method. And path integral quantum Monte Carlo, of course, has been widely used, especially for the study of superfluid helium or helium 4 in general. But more generally, it applies to, we can use the same general method to study itinerant bosons in continuous space, at least non-relativistic itinerant bosons in continuous space under this canonical Hamiltonian. So in general, we can study bosonic quantum fluids. I'm going to focus on a ground state version of this method, where we study ground state properties via imaginary time projection. So we can compute ground state properties in the center of this imaginary time path. Imaginary time is vertical in this direction. And this general approach, all the systematic errors can be reduced at polynomial cost in a controllable way. And so in general, it's an unbiased and exact method up to the statistical errors. And so this gives us access to the expectation value of operators. So we can measure expectation value of observables in the ground state. And of course, there's a lot of technology that has been developed around these methods. A very, very powerful method. The issue, of course, is what we want to study is the Renyi entropies or entanglement entropies. And the Renyi entropies are not conventionally written as an expectation value. They're related to the trace of a power of the reduced sense metric. So it's not necessarily obvious that it's even this, something like this is readily computable from a Monte Carlo method. However, fortunately, due to the work of Roger and some of his collaborators a couple years back, they developed a generic approach to allow for the calculation of Renyi entropies using Monte Carlo methods. And this general approach, rather than doing what you ordinarily do, is you study a single copy of your system, here we're actually going to replicate our system and take two identical but independent copies of our system and define an operator formally, which acts in this replicated Hilbert space that swaps the subregion between the two replicas. And using this trick, they demonstrated that you can write the relate second Renyi entropy to the expectation value of an operator, and therefore that makes it accessible via Monte Carlo method. So this was originally developed in the context of lattice models and has been widely used since in lattice models. So what we've done recently is imported this idea into the context of path integral quantum Monte Carlo in continuous space, which will then let us quantitatively study quantum fluid system. So again, here we have two, two replicas of our system, which are now stacked vertically. And the idea is that the estimator, which gives us the purity, which is related to the second Renyi entropy, is we allow these imaginary time world lines in the subregion A of interest, we allow them to swap between the two replicas. And we sample configurations where these world lines either swap or don't in subregion A. And it turns out that by sampling that configuration space of swapped and unswapped world lines, that gives us access to the, that gives us an estimator for this swap operator and therefore second Renyi. And we could study higher Renyi if we wanted as well, but I'll focus on the second. Okay, so we developed this method after developing, we demonstrated that it's an exact method, is proof of principle, and say an exactly solvable model. So we know it works to study the ground state of interacting bosons. Okay, so finally, get to the sort of the real meat of the talk is we want to actually study entanglement in superfluid helium. In case you're not disposed to be interested in superfluid helium, helium, ordinary helium 4, if you cool it below about 2 Kelvin, it reaches a superfluid phase. And of course, this has been studied for something like 80 years at this point, has led to several Nobel Prizes, including theoretical and experimental Nobel Prizes, and is one of the first and one of the most widely studied quantum phases of matter. It's exhaustively studied in distant labs all over the world. So it's a very fundamental quantum phase of matter study. But of course, up until now, one aspect of this important quantum phase of matter that hadn't been investigated was the entanglement that's one of the motivations here, is we have this very fundamental quantum phase of matter. While a lot of its quantum mechanical properties are very extremely well understood, can we shed a little bit more light by studying the entanglement in this? So again, we want to do this in a quantitative way that is not idealizing the system, or a quantitative way where we can really predict, we can actually quantitatively predict entanglement relevant to actual potential experimental systems in the future. And of course, Path Integral Monte Carlo generically allows us to do this because, again, our system is just non-relativistic bosons, where, and fortunately, have a accurate ab initio-based interatomic potential, which has been widely used for conventional calculation for a couple decades now. So because of the accuracy of our interatomic potential, then using this technology of path integral quantum Monte Carlo, it really allows for accurate calculations that reflect experiments. So, and this is, there's a huge volume of literature in studying helium, both experimentally and theoretically, and using this path integral Monte Carlo is just some example of comparison between experiment and theory that can come out of using this microscopic description with this accurate accurate interatomic. So we now have the basis for actually quantitatively studying superfluid helium, and I'm gonna focus on ground state calculations, so those zero temperature properties. And we can now use our machinery in this method for computing Renyi entropies to study ground state helium 4. So here are the calculations. We have a box here at boundary conditions, and we choose our region A to be a spherical subregion. And so we're going to ask, we're going to consider the entanglement between the spherical subregion and the rest of the box. And then we're going to scale the radius of our sphere for each system size and study the scaling of the second Renyi entropy as a function of both system size as well as the radius of our. So here's our quantum Monte Carlo results. That second Renyi entropy is on the vertical axis, the radius of the sphere is on the horizontal axis, the colors represent different system sizes. And so what we see is that while Well, for each system size, you see these deviations where the system starts to feel locked. So these are finite size effects, basically, as the radius is approaching the edge of the box. Away from those finite size deviations, we basically see essentially is one universal curve, and a rough look at the data from this perspective. The black line represents fit to area loss scaling, and so it does appear at this stage we're seeing area loss scaling of this universal scaling away from our finite size effect. As a comparison, this dashed line represents the result for non-interacting bosons. And the important thing there is, while non-interacting bosons do entangle these two regions of space, not due to interactions, but due to particle fluctuations in and out of the sphere, they don't follow an area law. And so the area law that is arising is strictly due to the interactions. And so that's why we need an interacting quantum system to demonstrate this area law scaling. So I'm going to take a look at these exact same data, and I'm just going to consider two possible fits. We're going to look at these fits a little bit more precisely, convince ourselves of what we're seeing here. So I'm going to take the quantum Monte Carlo data, subtract either a two-parameter area law fit or a two-parameter extensive volume law fit, and plot the residuals vertically here. The blue are the volume law residuals, and clearly the volume law residuals are not zero, so we can rule out a volume law, so we're not seeing an extensive volume law. Whereas the residuals for the area law do appear to be consistent with zero, and that's suggesting that we are seeing, actually area law scaling. So the key here is now we're demonstrating area law scaling not in some idealized theoretical model, but really in a quantitative microscopic description of a real system, that real quantum phase of matter that of course exists in labs all over the world. Now, seeing an area law is not all that there is. We can go a little bit beyond that. We can consider not just the area law, the nature of the scaling itself, but also this coefficient. So this is dimensionless coefficient. I've put in a short distance length scale to make this coefficient dimensionless. We can consider this dimensionless coefficient A that we calculate from the fit to an area law. And this coefficient, first of all, we can, when recombining with a short distance length scale, it really defines a length scale of the entanglement. So there's several length scales involved in the microscopic interatomic potential for helium-4. And perhaps not surprisingly, this entanglement length we find to be of the same order, order 5 angstroms. But the key here is this length scale is purely defined based on the scaling of the entanglement. So of course, it arises due to the physics of those short length scales, but it's defined purely in terms of entanglement itself. But then we can also look at how this coefficient varies as we change the density of our system. And so what we did was we changed the density, staying within the superfluid regime. So here's a range of densities that are all within the superfluid regime. We find as this area law coefficient increasing monotonically, the inset is the pressure, and the pressure also increases. So essentially what we're finding here is this is suggesting that this area law coefficient, which is the strength of the entanglement, increases monotonically with the pressure. And so this sort of suggests that simple experimental knobs like pressure actually give you access to, in some way, engineering entanglement in a quantum fluid. As I said before, so far we haven't studied large enough systems where we can really accurately characterize the subleading behavior. Because in general, we do expect that to have not only a leading order area law, actually it is theoretically predicted there should be a logarithmic subleading term, and that logarithmic subleading term actually contains universal physics. It arises due to the fact that there's a spontaneous broken symmetry, and actually essentially counts the number of Goldstone modes in your system when there is such a symmetry breaking. And it also, in this geometry, also encodes central charge of a related formal field theory. And so this dimensionless number actually contains universal physics that's related to the superfluid phase of the system. So for the system sizes we've studied, this is we can't conclusively identify this term, but hopefully in future work we'll be able to study the scaling beyond the leading order scaling, see some of this. Okay, so I think I'm out of time. So just to briefly summarize, we've developed a method, numerical method, which now lets us study strongly interacting quantum many-body systems, in particular bosonic quantum fluids, in any spatial dimension. And so this lets us study experimentally relevant real quantum phases of matter in a quantitative way. And so this has allowed us to demonstrate the area loss scaling in a real phase of matter. And we do think that with future studies, we can not only potentially uncover universal features of real quantum fluid systems, but also potentially shed light on how entanglement can be, for example, manipulated in using experimental techniques. So finally, I just wanted to again acknowledge my collaborators and thank you for your time.
I have two very probably naive questions. So if I go to the limit of absolutely non-interacting bosons, at least in 1D, I would think that the ground state is extended, and so the entanglement is actually not area law, because each eigenstate would be spatially extended. So, but your curves show that the entanglement entropy for free bosons is actually less than the area law entanglement. So can you maybe explain why that's the case? And the second one is the pressure curve. So I would also expect for infinite pressure, I get a perfect solid, and that has very low entanglement. And so I would expect as pressure increases, entanglement decreases. But your curve also showed the opposite of that. So maybe you can explain the physical reason behind that.
Yes. So you're right that we haven't frozen the system yet. So you're right that eventually we would expect a freezing transition. And then that would dramatically change the scaling of the area law in that. But here we're still within the superfluid regime. So we're increasing the density, but remaining in the superfluid regime. And it's not too surprising that the entanglement strength is increasing, because essentially what we're doing is we're pushing the density. The equilibrium density is somewhere around here, and we're pushing the density further into the stronger interacting regime. And so it's not surprising that as we increase the interactions that entanglement is. And as to your first question, this free boson scaling really is you essentially have, when you bipartition your system free bosons, you basically have a binomial distribution the fluctuations basically have a binomial distribution, and therefore you get an entanglement which is logarithmic in essentially the system size, subsystem size, and so that logarithmic scaling is slower than the area law.
So can you say roughly how much CPU time you need for all these calculations?
A lot of that is varying with roughly speaking, it's maybe an order of magnitude harder than the calculations for conventional calculations for methods. So it is certainly more expensive than studying conventional properties. But for example, with path integral methods you can study thousands of particles, and we haven't been able to yet push to those system sizes because we have to prove some efficiency. So we do expect to be limited to at least in order of magnitude or more or less than what you can achieve with studying conventional properties. But the basic fundamental scaling remains polynomial, and so we still think we can take advantage of all the technology built around the method to push to reasonably significantly larger system size.
So I was wondering what the prospects were for taking advantage of this work to actually get a measure of the level of entanglement or the entanglement entropy in experimental systems, like in some singlet, quantum singlet ground state system. If you wanted experimentally to distinguish between an RVB type state or a valence bond state or valence bond glass or these sorts of things, or actually even in the case of helium-3, I mean, to what extent could this be directly related to a measurement?
Yeah, so at the moment, there's only been one for many body systems. So for few body systems, there's many other experimental approaches. But for many body systems, we're really limited at the moment to the experimental methods that have come out of cold atoms and optical lattices, like out of Mark Greiner's group, where they do something that's fairly analogous numerically, having two replicas and so on. So that method potentially, presumably, extended to other artificial type systems. It doesn't necessarily, doesn't obviously extend to, for say, a natural system like helium-3 or helium-4. So presumably, to make the jump between a artificial many-body system where you have a lot of control and potentially can do something like these experiments out of Mark Greiner's group, to go from that to a naturally occurring phase of matter is a big leap, and so probably it requires maybe a very significant experimental development. So at the moment, the experimental methods are not applicable to generic phase of matter.
Yeah, so to follow the same general theme here, entanglement entropy, you know, we get mixed, we get confused with words, right? It's not to be confused with, if you like, real entropy, in the sense that the measurable entropy is extensive is part of the laws of thermodynamics, and we don't see any prospect of that failing anytime soon, right? So imagine you go near a quantum critical point where you have a hugely entangled system and you make a measurement of the entropy of that system, you know, at some low but finite temperature where you can measure it. Surely the statement here is not that we're ever going to start observing non-extensive entropies when we do that measurement.
Right, so the statements here I'm strictly making for zero temperature systems. So I'm the ground state where the system overall, it has no entropy. So here, and then I'm isolating the subsystem and I'm considering the entropy of the subsystem. So you're absolutely right, if we turn on finite temperature, then that subsystem will then develop a volume law scaling from thermal entropy, and obviously very quickly that thermal entropy will take over as a leading order behavior. So it's
Saying very quickly, not immediately. So the claim is that there will be some low enough but finite temperature where in principle the measurement of non-extensive entropy is possible or not.
Well, so from numerics, I mean, these general methods have been applied to finite temperature calculations, and not in helium, but in other lattice models. And in that case, there is both a volume law signature, which can be subtracted off, and then to leave a area law and other signatures. So from those, is at very low temperature, but at least from numerics, that suggesting that you can decompose the pieces that are the extensive volume law, which can be subtracted off, and then recover the residual behavior, which the due to entanglement.
But a real quantum could
reflect the
measure.
Yeah, I mean,
what enough temperature?
I mean, so you know, the how. How achievable that is in a real system, that's a challenge, experimental question. But so that's certainly, yes, there are issues here with what are the accessible temperature scales and when these behaviors cross over and so on. So can't make direct claims that, oh, this will be.
Can you indulge me in one more question then? The way way everybody seems to define entanglement entropy, though, it's basis dependent.
Yeah.
And thermodynamic entropy to everything we know is not basis dependent.
So it's not basis. I mean, it's a property of a trace of a power of the Reducanu matrix, and that's basis independent. It depends on the subregion you choose, and there's many ways, shapes and types of ways you can bipartition your system, but it's not dependent on the basis.
Great. Yeah. Okay, so let's thank Chris for a very interesting talk.